Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
You have just pulled your chair up and joined us at the table of three guys theologizing. This is Barry York, professor of pastoral theology and homiletics at Reformed Presbyterian Theological Seminary. And I'm joined with my buddies, pastor and preacher Kyle Borg from Winchester, Kansas, and Scott Hunt, prosecuting attorney and our faithful parishioner from Marion, Indiana. And we are glad that you are with us. Scott, back in the good old days, I used to love our fellowship lunches there in the halls of Sycamore. We would eat, and then we would sit around the table, a lot of the guys, and talk theology. And so this is reminiscent of those times. There's vicious rumors that float around that we were doing that while the women were cleaning up in the kitchen. But we know those are just the rumors, no truth behind that, right, Scott?
None behind that.
Well, we're glad
our church had a kitchen.
Well, we're glad that you have joined us. And guys, we've gotten some emails from some listeners, and I thought I would read a couple of excerpts from those listeners who really show how perceptive they are as they listen to this podcast. And these guys are faithful listeners, so I want to just encourage you with these words. The first one is from Kenny. He was actually from Northern Ireland, so it's fun to know that we have a listener from there. And he says, greetings to the three gentlemen who are wont to theologize.
Real quick, Barry, could you read this in an Irish accent if it's from Ireland?
I think that might ruin it.
Okay. My bad. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Kenny says, I look forward to your podcast each week. It's fun listening to the Professor Dr. York attempt to keep the unruly pastor and parishioner in line. So
how do you get that reputation? You poke the bear. Like, I wish people understood how much Barry instigates it and then steps back and watches Scott and I go at it.
That's so funny.
And I just can't help myself. I mean, I'm sorry. to the listeners out there, I am sorry. I'll behave.
Kenny does go on to say, on a serious note, the content you provide is informative and edifying, and he thanks all who are involved in the production process, which reminds me, one of the persons behind the scenes that we should mention on occasion is our friend Craig, who takes these podcasts and some of the errors and some of the uhs and tries to get them into a better form for our listeners. And so we're thankful for Craig. There's others that help. We're just grateful for those behind the scenes. Got another one from a man named Nicholas, who's a pastor out in Indiana, not too far from you, I don't believe, Scott. And he says, as a longtime listener to 3GT, he goes on to make some nice comments about one of us. But then he also talks about how you are noticeably, he's speaking to me, you are noticeably long-suffering to endure Kyle's gentle ribbing. But that's another matter.
I quit. This is my resignation. I quit.
Then he goes on to say, I'm sorry you didn't let me finish reading. He says, I actually have a great deal of respect for Kyle because he was a classmate of yours up at Puritan, or at least knew you up at Puritan. So.
Nice.
So that's from Nicholas. So anyway, we are thankful that you're out there listening to us week by week, some of you. And we're hopeful that today's episode will also be edifying and informative to you, because the topic at hand.
Barry, real quick.
Oh, yep.
If I write a letter into 3GT extolling and praising my virtues, will you read it?
Yeah. You just have to use a fake name like I do.
Pseudonym.
I mean, no, these are real letters. These are real letters. Well, I might be showing my age by this, but I'm going to go ahead. That hasn't stopped me before. And maybe I've shared this before, but then again, I'm showing my age, so it doesn't matter. But I grew up when I can still remember when it was a big deal when we went from rotary dial phones to push button phones. And when we went from phones that hung on your wall and you were connected to them with a long cord to cordless phones. But today we live in this age of the smartphone, and it's a whole different world. When I was in high school, I actually dated my wife in high school before she was my wife. And if I called her on the phone, she not only knew that I was on the other line, but so did her whole family. I don't know if they listened in or not, but they had the ability to do so because they could often pick up another phone in the house and listen in on the conversation. I'll have to ask her dad if he used to do that or not.
So real quick, Barry, was this before or after party lines? Because yeah. You might have had her neighbors listening in on your phone conversations.
Yeah, that
too.
That was actually before my time.
Okay.
So
but Barry actually remembers calling the switchboard and connect him to some weird residence on the other side of town.
But our concern is the impact that smartphones and social media are having on our youth. And we want to talk about that subject today. Let me just give you a statistic to get us started here. I just read that over half of children in the United States, 53%, own a smartphone by the age of 11. 84% of teenagers now have their own phones. So that's a pretty amazing statistic. And just want to start this off by saying, should that be a concern of ours or not, particularly as we think about trying to shepherd our own families and the youth of the church?
I mean, it would depend, not to split hairs here. It would depend on what we mean by concern. Maybe at face value, we can say in one sense, it shouldn't be a concern. I think the bigger concern is the context in which that often happens. And what I think we're going to be talking about today is how disconnected parents are to the connectivity of their children. And so I think there is a way, you know, I don't think that we stand in a place to say across the board, well, absolutely no kid should ever have a smartphone. You know, it's easy to want to do that in today's cultural context, to apply that. Isn't it the Apostle Paul who says, you know, do not handle, do not taste, do not touch. These things have the appearance of godliness, but they really lack the power. And it really is tempting to want to be Amish in today's cultural context.
All right. Yes.
What are you laughing about, Scott?
You just are very out with it, aren't you, Kyle?
Well, what do you want me to be?
No, I appreciate it. It was just it struck a funny chord in me. I don't know.
How is that different from any other episode?
Laughing matters, Scott. So I mean, in one sense, it does depend. I don't want to strain gnats here, but it does depend on what you mean by concern. But I do think that those statistics prove that this is an issue that needs to be talked about. And mm-hmm. It's an issue that we need to seek to bring biblical wisdom into.
You know, and to go along with something you introduced this topic with, Barry. So when you would call Miriam, you said that everybody in the house knew who was talking to her, right? Mm-hmm. And so the concern would be, I think there's a concern if 53% of 11-year-olds have a smartphone and we have no idea who they're talking to, what they're doing with it. But if we are as engaged, and perhaps we'll get here later on in this episode, but if we are engaged as Miriam's parents were when you were courting her, I don't think there's as much cause for concern. So I think the concern is, are we active enough with these children that have smartphones, not whether or not they have smartphones? And that's basically what Kyle is saying as well, I think.
Well, that gets to the issue. Have you men seen damaging results of the misuse of smartphones and social media in your ministry? I know you have to be careful because we're not wanting to out some of our own congregants. I don't mean that, but just what kind of things have you seen that have led to struggles in households or in certain situations?
I think from my perspective, perhaps one of the greatest downsides to a smartphone is the ease in which particularly men can access inappropriate and very inappropriate content and hide it well. I think that is perhaps, in my opinion, the number one danger of smartphones.
Yeah, I think that's a danger. I almost, and maybe this will come out more with clarity, I think there are other dangers that abound in every way. Simply put, yes, I've seen the damaging effects of this. I will admit, at the risk of maybe getting myself in a little bit of trouble, I've never met a young person yet, as much as I love them, who I think use their cell phones and social media in a good way. I just haven't. And, you know, maybe more generally speaking, I know that school districts deal with this. I remember speaking to a high school guidance counselor who said, you know, school systems trying to deal with the influx of cell phones and social media, he said, it's a living nightmare. All the way from, you know, bullying statistics, you know, the fact that these kids cannot get away from their peers and their peers know how to make their life, you know, and I don't mean this irreverently, but they know how to make their lives a living hell and they can't get away. You know, there was a day when you get off the bus, you don't have to see the kids again for, you know, but now everybody is so connected. And he said the amount of social media bullying that goes on, the amount of things, the amount of inappropriate information that is shared. You know, I was really struck. He told me that, you know, in the high school in which he worked, there was a student who was identified as the filing cabinet, was his nickname. And basically, he was the center point for everybody who would send inappropriate messages. He would collate those and gather those and then be able to exchange them with other students when students wanted to seek revenge on somebody. And so, you know, and I think the statistics are in that young people are sharing extremely inappropriate things. Mm-hmm. You know, there was an article in a major news source a number of years ago, and I'm going to leave it that ambiguous because I don't remember where it was, but I remember it off the top of my head, where it talked about, you know, tragically that in our social media driven world, many young girls are losing their virginity before they even have their first kiss. And it's very much spurred on by social media and giving away that which is really sacred and holy in a very profane way. And so I think there are major problems here. And on top of that, the addiction. I mean, just, you know, how many times I meet with a young person and their phone is in front of their face the entire time they're talking to me. And it's like, I can't get them to break that. You know, they're on Snapchat, they're on this, they're on that. When they're hanging out with their group of friends in their friend circles, there's very little face-to-face dialogue going on. They are all engaged in social media. So there's massive addiction to this as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I think you're pointing out a number of the dangers of it. I remember reading a number of years ago of a young girl in Cincinnati. It was prom night and her mother thought she was in the bedroom getting ready. It was kind of quiet. She goes in there and finds that she had killed herself. And the reason is because in a brief relationship that she had with a boy, she ended up showing nude pictures of herself, sending them in what is called sexting, texting them over to him. When they broke up, he began to share them. And across numerous public schools in Cincinnati, students had access to these and they began to just badger her, like you mentioned, Kyle. And it just drove her to the point of taking this awful action. And teen suicides are up. And one factor that has been noticed is this very thing, the social media pressures, the bullying that's taking place. And so that's just one of the dangers. I think another thing that you're pointing out that's just so important to understand is, again, my trying to call Miriam in high school, there were buffers and obstacles and the knowledge of community around us that slowed things down. But with smartphones, everything's so accelerated. So this example you gave of people losing their virginity before they even take their first kiss is just an example, sadly, a gross example of how seeming intimacy can be built between two people without anyone else knowing about it, because it's easier to hide things on the smartphones. So yeah, many, many dangers that we see. And so as parents and pastors and elders, we have to be wise and trying to encourage, instruct our people along, especially our young people along in the use of these things, but not just our young people, the parents of the young people. So, you guys, let's just talk about that for a moment this way. Both of you men are fathers of younger children than, of course, mine, granddad sitting here. So what are some of the ways that you handle this? Do your children have smartphones, access to social media? Are you a Luddite? You're the only one on the internet in your home.
I have four children. Obviously, my oldest is in college. He has a smartphone. He's 19, so he's kind of he's an adult, and so I treat him a little bit differently. But mm-hmm. what I have done with my when he was younger, we forbid certain social media apps on his phone. He was never to have them on his phone, and if we found them on his phone, it would be thrown away or taken away. The social media apps that he did have, he was required to log into my phone and sign in with those so that I could see any conversations he was having and I could see what he was posting. And I'm sorry that, you know, it seems like a little bit of a helicopter parent, but that's how we handled that. And so we knew what was going on. My other two have smartphones.
That's not being a helicopter parent. I just want to throw that out there because there are helicopter parents and that's used pejoratively and some parents need to learn to lighten up. I don't think this is a case where you guys are demonstrating a helicopter parent.
Well, I appreciate that. That's probably about the nicest thing you've ever said to me, Kyle.
About the only nice thing I will ever say.
Thank you. With my other two that are 16 now, they have smartphones, but thankfully, they have not gotten into the social media. They kind of hate it. So perhaps they've gotten a little bit of the curmudgeonness from their dad with respect to technology and those kind of things. They'll look at Pinterest. I suppose that's social media, but that's to look up recipes or watch YouTube to see different sporting events and whatnot. But in terms of posting and participating in social media, they've been pretty good about not participating. So it's... But I still get access to their phone. I mean, the rule is if I'm paying for it, I get full access to it and you can't stop me.
Which, Scott, I think that's such an important point. And I would actually extend that beyond, you know, not just that you're paying for it, as long as they remain under your house. You know, I am struck by the number of parents that I have talked to or met or young people who tell me the way their parents act. That these parents act like their kids have a right to privacy on their phones. You know, like I know everything's passcode protected and parents don't know what those are. And files on the phone are passcode protected and parents don't know. And parents, I've talked to parents who have been so hesitant and just kind of saying, well, he deserves this, but no, he doesn't deserve his privacy. 15 years old. Like, you know, if we're talking privacy, like, yeah, he can go, you know, change and everything in private, that's fine. But when it comes to media like this, I don't get this idea that these kids have a right to privacy on these things.
So do your kids have a phone, Kyle?
So any of your kids? My oldest is going to be 13 in a few months. And so maybe I find myself in a slightly different place. None of our kids have phones. Our three oldest have Kindle Fires. But they are set up for kid use. And so there's master passwords that both Rachel and I know and have, and we can log into an app on our phone and see whatever they are doing in real time or track their history. The safeguards are there that these Kindle Fires are not open access to the internet or social media. The kids can't download their own apps. We have to download those for them. We can set time limits on certain things, even on games. So the most that my kids have, they have Kid Messenger, which is another thing that Rachel and I control. We approve those who they can message. So they've been approved for like grandma and grandpa or people in the church, things like that. But my kids have zero access outside of our complete and total control.
I think one of the things that's lost that both of you are bringing up as you talk about children at different stages is that a lot of parents aren't aware of just the need to help that children develop maturity, that there are certain things they can do at one age that they maybe shouldn't do at a younger age. And I think we've got to help people recapture that, especially with the use of a phone, because if we remember the very first sin happened at the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And people have to understand these smartphones have the potential mm-hmm. to allow their child to see anything or to hear anything, to be connected to anyone. And that is that. That's part of our duty as parents, is to protect our children from seeing things or being involved with people that they don't have any right to be involved with. I've heard of, you know, children all of a sudden disappearing because they were totally connected to a stranger that they thought maybe it was a teenage girl, thought the guy was 17 and turns out he's 37 or whatever. And it's just so dangerous. And parents seem to not realize that by putting that little device in their hand, how much of the world that they're opening up to them. So if you were going to try to help some parents understand how to develop their children's maturity, what might be some steps or advice that you would give to them in this regard?
I think first and foremost, parents need to be aware of what these social media apps are and what they do and what they're capable of, you know, and I don't mean this superficial knowledge like, oh, YouTube, you can play videos. You know, the habit forming, identity shaping content of YouTube, even non-Christians are sounding the trumpet of warning. Like, this is really dangerous. Your kids are being confronted with content that radically shapes their identity on YouTube. You know, you think of Twitter. Twitter has almost no filters with regard to content. You can access and get almost any kind of pornography over Twitter that you possibly want. And parents need to be aware of that. Snapchat is, you know, sometimes nicknamed sex chat because of the things that happen on it. You know, these messages disappear after 24 hours and, you know, forget the conspiracy theories about some big collection of all of these things, you know, that's okay, maybe, but Snapchat's even more dangerous than that. You know, these messages appear, they supposedly disappear after 24 hours. That means kids feel very free to message what they want, you know, to do what they want on it. There's settings where you can track people where they are, you know, like, I don't want people to know the location of my kids. Like, why on earth would you open that up to the whole world to be able to see? Mm-hmm. So Snapchat itself presents dangers. You know, you have TikTok and TikTok, I mean,
Scott, do you know what TikTok is?
Do you know what TikTok is?
It's not Tic Tacs. It's not the little candy.
No, Scott. So TikTok would be a social media app where people are able to post up to a minute long video. And some of it's, I will admit, some of it's wildly entertaining. Like, I find TikTok to be fairly fun sometimes. At the same time, the content that it opens itself up to and the messages that kids can get, you know, again, even there's not strong filters. And there is a world of inappropriate, grotesque, just profane things. You know, you think of Omegle. I don't know if either of you have heard of Omegle. Omegle is a social media site that allows you to randomly video chat strangers. And it's kind of like a roulette game where you just hit a button that says, you know, find somebody. And then a random video pops up where you're instantaneously video chatting with somebody. And, you know, I don't want to be unnecessarily crass, but I do think it's important to stress these things. Omegle is very well known for men masturbating on camera, and young people have access to this. You know, it's and they do it. They gather together and they have fun scrolling through all these different video chats. And so I think parents really need to be aware of these things and understand that young people do not use social media the way us old farts do. You know, my dad's retired now and all he does is post fishing memes, right? That's not what kids are using social media for. They're not posting fishing memes. They are actually shaping their worldview and their identities through these things.
And even beyond the grossness of some of the things you've mentioned, Kyle, it's just the vanity of it all. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes I see some of these things that it might come across Facebook or whatever, and like, I don't even understand what they're trying to do. It just seems like they're trying for just a few moments to capture someone's attention. I remember sitting with a young person on a plane, and he was claiming to be a star on Instagram. He had like over 1 million or maybe 2 million followers, and this was his life. And he was actually flying somewhere to do a movie with other Instagram quote stars or influencers or whatever you call them. And I, we had a spiritual conversation, and I looked at some of the things he did, and I just thought, this is just silly. Like, and you're devoting your whole life to this silliness, and it's so much a part of your identity. One of the things that I become more increasingly concerned, as we all are in the church, of course, is the transsexual movement. And you just, again, it's just my old age, I'm sure, but I can't even believe we are where we are right now in this whole thing and how we got here. And I've just thought about the idea of catechizing, how important it is to put, as we've talked about in a previous episode, to put biblical true thoughts in the minds and hearts of our young people. And yet when we let them spend all this time on social media, it's erasing that. It's bombarding them with the world's catechism. And I think that's why we're seeing this huge increase. I just saw a video about the rate of young girls who are beginning to identify as boys. It's just really accelerating. And I think the social media is a big part of all of that.
And, you know, Barry, I would throw in there too, you know, this isn't just the result of you being a crotchety old man, or, you know, it's not even in one sense an explicitly Christian concern. So I think I've noted it before, but this woman named Abigail Schreier, who by no stretch of the imagination is not a conservative Christian, wrote a book called Irreversible Damage on this very issue and how, you know, the way in which young women especially are being targeted by the transgender movement through social media. And she says, you know, social media is at the root of the transgender craze. And she said, you know, what anorexia was to the 90s, what cutting was to the 2000s, transgenderism is to this generation. And these young girls are going on social media, and that's where they are getting their understanding of their identity. And it, you know, I mean, come on, when a liberal non-Christian is waving the warning flag, then conservative Christians should probably perk up and listen a little more.
I recall when I read the book The Shallows by Nicholas Carr a number of years ago, one of the deep impressions it left upon me is how the studies show the plasticity of the human brain and the way the neurons form, and that there is an effect on our brains that the media, the computers all bring. And so part of a drug addict, it is his body is desiring the chemicals because he's trained through actions, his mind to think a certain way to move toward him getting the gratification that he wants. That's why he has the urge. And as you mentioned earlier, there's this addictive nature to all of this that just causes this urge to go and see more, to want more. And when we do that, it is changing our identity. And it might not lead us to, you know, changing gender, but it can be changing us in ways that we're not always totally aware of, and especially children are not aware of. I know in my household, we brought our children along slowly with the use of a phone. We would start off with non-smartphones as in their teenage years, especially, and really they didn't get one until they started driving because it was just a safety thing. But it was not a smartphone. And I told him, if you want a smartphone, then you're going to pay for it, because I'm not. And that kind of helped because they can't, they're expensive and they also break. And, you know, so if you want one, then you're going to pay for it. And so that's helped to, those are just a few things to help develop a little bit of the idea of maturing into it. The other thing we did with cell phones and smartphones is for a certain period of time after they had access to them, if they got a cell phone for driving, when they came home and walked into the kitchen, they had to put it on the counter. They weren't allowed to use it for other purposes for a time. And as they showed us that we could trust them, then we would entrust them with greater use of it. And I think we have to, as parents, think about developing our children's use of these things. But again, it's just like parents have lost their minds. I'm still remembering when television was such a threat and churches would have throw
when
your television.
Elvis Presley was shaking his hips on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Well, not quite that bad. But I remember when churches would have these 1 month with the TV off and everybody put their television in a closet for a month just to try to not allow the TV to influence us so greatly. And man, that was a long time ago.
You know, though, Barry, I think what I appreciate what you're saying is, you know, this is a massive crisis. And unfortunately, I think that most of us are way behind in knowing how to respond. And so I think one of the things, you know, in counseling parents, what do you do? One, parents need to be informed. But then I think these baby steps need to be taken. You know, like your kids should not have their cell phone in the privacy of their bedroom, period. I mean, I also can't enter that world. You know, when you walk in the house, like you said, put your phone on the counter, keep it here, or after X hour at night, after 9 o'clock, you know, don't do this. I think there's just some common sense baby steps. You know, don't allow your kids to have an entirely private life on their cell phones. Have access to those things and demand that you have access to those things and check up on them and follow up on them. And I think those baby steps are, you know, I wish in some sense that we could have a bigger program of help, but right now I just feel like it's those that are going to prove to be the most helpful.
And I want to add something to the parents who think that they are invading their children's privacy, to understand what social media is doing. Every economic transaction, there's something being sold, and it's no different with social media. And what is being sold is you. You are being sold to advertisers, your information. And so you have become the product and they are selling you. And so think about your children being bought and sold by people other than you. That should raise red flags and cause alarms to go off in your head. And you would want to know who is buying my child. That's exactly what's happening on these social media sites. Apart from all the other dangerous content, your son or your daughter is being bought and sold to the highest bidder.
And with that, because I so appreciate that, you know, as well, we need to see that this is more than just a political ideation, you know, well-meaning parents, liberal politics. Okay, well, I'm not a fan of liberal politics, but this is much greater. There's a war for our kids' souls and their identities here. This is more than just, you know, Facebook is liberal and they're going to indoctrinate my kids with liberal policies. Well, again, I don't like that. I don't want that. But this goes way beyond a political issue. They are buying and selling our kids' identities. And I think that is way more significant than the political leanings of these platforms. Mm-hmm.
And just reminds us, this is wisdom. We need wisdom. And these things are not called wise phones. And we're going to need a lot of wisdom from the Lord to be able to help our children navigate through the phones, the social media. And the Proverbs we just got to remember in the Proverbs, we are asking our children to give us their hearts, to follow our ways, to keep the commandments from the Lord that we're imparting to them. And so as you both of you men are saying, I think what we're putting this episode out for is to call parents back to sacred duty, that you have to guard your family against these influences and train your children to use them in a wise fashion. There are resources out there. We'll seek to link to some of those. I know David Murray's done work in this area, Tim Challey, some others have done work in this area. Kyle, were you going to raise a... Oh, I thought you were basically raising your hand. Sorry. But we'll link to some resources that we think could be helpful to parents. But we just wanted to put this episode together to hopefully reinvigorate you to your duty as parents and in the church. Well, that's all for today on this episode of Three Guys Theologizing. We're very grateful that you did come and sit around this table with us for this discussion. If you'd like to hear other discussions or learn more about us or even give to this ministry, you can go over to 3GT.xyz in order to do so. And as Kenny and Nicholas showed us, we do love hearing from our listeners. And so if you want to write in and say some other funny things about Kyle and Scott, I'll be glad to receive those. Thank you for tuning into this episode of 3GT.